Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today. Here on WMR.FM. It's the 30th of July, 2026. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls. And
hi, everybody.
Christine, it's July 30th. This is the last couple of days of July. Kids are going back to school in the United States in the last couple of weeks, and they're going to start going back to school in September in up in Canada, in the northern states, and summer's over. It's Labor Day almost.
Well, you can tell it around here because everyone's taking their families on their final vacations. I went to Costco yesterday and there were 10 open parking spaces. I've never seen that before.
Well, that is one of the things. Yeah, the downside of that is getting professional services, going to a doctor, trying to find a lawyer, trying to find a plumber, trying to find anybody with an R at the end of their profession. Yeah, it's not going to happen. They're all at the cottage. They're all on vacation right now.
And also,
Toronto is like Paris. It empties out in August.
We don't empty out in August because it is like our month-long vacation, but we empty out because it gets like this week to be 110, and people leave Vegas with their families for their final vacation to like California, where it's maybe 90
indeed,
or 80.
Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to go through this week. Some neat stuff, some really quick announcements. A new MCP, Model Context Protocol, how AI systems are actually going to be talking to each other and to third-party tools. Seen the largest update since it was ever introduced. It's now stateless. Requests are no longer dependent on session server IDs. Basically, you can run MCP on your website now, and have an interaction with AIs or agents, without an extra step having to be part of it.
Yeah, and so people know, MCP is managed by the Agentic AI Foundation, which sits under the Linux Foundation, introduced by Anthropic 2 years ago, and this is considered the most important update since it launched. So you won't be tied to that ID. It means it's much more fluid and much more capable for enterprise level situations. So,
and by the way, it's not just Anthropic, OpenAI, Google, Microsoft.
Oh,
Amazon.
Yeah. They just launched. I'm just saying they launched. Yeah. It's everyone uses it. So the official quote is, the highlight of the release is the stateless protocol core. MCP is transforming from a bidirectional stateful protocol into a request response stateless protocol. It's one of the most highly requested features from developers who are eager for better reliability and scalability for their MCP servers. And this is an Ars Technica.
WordPress users, you might be noticing a lot of updates and on-the-fly updates. 7.0.1 maintenance. A maintenance release contains 31 bug fixes that were included in the 7.0 development cycle. 31 bug fixes. So if you haven't updated, update immediately.
Yeah, and two real quick things. The most interesting fixes are PH 8.5 compatibility, but also security-related function fix. I just have to mention this one because I'm just amazed that this is like new. And basically, they're going to strip HTML of anything that shouldn't be there, which means that it's much harder for people to store nefarious things in your database if they manage to hack your code. But that's been a thing like you've done since 2000. So I'm surprised it's a new update. But it is a new update.
They can do this now because they have AIs going through and finding the cracks in the code that have been there since like day one. So, and I guess the reason why I think we're seeing so many updates on like so many platforms, on our cell phones, all over the place, because if Claude Mythos really was that powerful and was out there being able to, find bugs like it was going through a like it was going through swampland. I imagine there's a lot of bugs to fix.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, Google Search Console news. Platform properties are now fully live. You can see how your sites or your campaigns are doing on third-party platforms, TikTok, the cesspool formerly known as Twitter, YouTube, and of course how things are performing within a Google search.
Yeah, and remember, this is only for social media through Google search. Not all. I'm sorry, I had something go down my throat wrong. my water.
Yeah, how
So
content on
it's
the platforms are performing in Google search. Somebody
yeah.
finds your content through Google search and goes to it,
Yes,
on,
it's
say,
not
Facebook or.
or TikTok or whatever social, just so people are aware, it's not all their social media. It's just through Google search when you find social media there.
Okay, and similarly, Google Search Console AI performance reports are rolling out to more people. India, it's. Used to only be the UK. Now people in India are reporting seeing AI reports or the new AI reports. I have
Yeah.
not in Canada.
Barry in this article, I believe, from Search Engine Roundtable, I don't believe that he saw it yet either. So, but we do
Okay.
know some people in the US were already getting it before it was supposedly rolled out. So,
I would wonder if that has anything to do with where their sites are housed. What if you are sitting on an Indian server?
I don't know. Probably. It's probably based on IP or country code. So. But they didn't say in the article.
Yeah, well, again, I haven't I have three American sites and two Canadian sites that I'm currently monitoring, and I haven't seen them on any, so. Google Page Indexing reports delays in providing static data. This is going back to June the 11th. Google Search Console's page indexing report is been getting stuck and not showing more daily data for, well, the past several weeks. This isn't happening for everybody. I've seen fresh Google data.
Yeah, and they're also seeing grouped data. So where the dates are grouped together, like there's like a skip in the dates.
And then Google's sort of compiling results and putting it together as a
Yeah.
grouping.
Yeah, it looks like it. It's just all such a weird. The report's been broken for a long time. Barry and Search Engine Roundtable has a list of July 11th through July 24th was the first time. July 1st to July 10th is the second. July June 13th through June. I'm sorry, I went backwards. It was the third time, the second time, and the first time was June 13th through June 30th, which was 18 days. So it's been stuck a lot in the last 2 months. More stuck than
Well,
not.
again, Google is changing its entire systems in how it reads and understands websites, what it's looking for on websites. I imagine it's having problems keeping up with itself.
Yeah, it seems so. I think that's a
This is
definite.
what we've been reporting what for the last 18 months on why pages might find themselves in the crawled but not indexed category. And there's been an uptick in stories like that. Same with discovered but not crawled. An uptick in stories about that. And that's, indicative that people are seeing issue after issue after issue, indexing and crawling issue after issue after issue, which means it's Google's thing. They're making a change or, they want, how to say this, they're looking for something that here until now websites aren't providing them. You know what I mean? They just haven't articulated what that is, so websites aren't giving it to them. And there's big holes in there were, that's my guess.
Yeah, possible. Or it's just also possible. Sundar rearranged everything internally in Google 2 years ago that, the system and area got the proper attention,
I'm not
maintenance
sure
of
if
the
I think
DSC
he's too
tools.
busy or too lazy to do that.
Or maybe just,
to.
I mean, start the people to maintain the GSC tool properly.
So there's entire groups of people who should be maintaining the infrastructure who aren't anymore, and things are just cogs are just falling out.
Possibly, because this has been a lot. I mean, I told you last week, I was like, maybe I should add a bug section to our weekly show, because every week there's some sort of
Well,
bugs at Google. And
actually,
5 years ago, you would never have heard of bugs every week at Google.
as you were talking in the last story, I was thinking we should do just that because there's probably a discernible pattern if we were able to put all those stories together and look.
Yeah, actually, that's a good idea. I will do that.
See, that's when
Tell me
reporting
bugs.
becomes journalism, right? Okay, but
Again,
back to reporting. OpenAI. Oh, sorry.
ChatGPT has become a big boy now. It's an actual ad server. Like
Oh,
you have to have all
well.
many of the functions you need. Because when it first rolled out, it's like host ads, but we give you no data on how those ads function, work, or convert, or anything. So now they've Ads Manager adds budget changes, new features, API, and ad formats. This is an SEO roundtable. We're not going to go in depth here, but people, if they're doing ads on ChatGPT, will be very happy to see that they have like conversion optimized campaigns now and spend pacing for daily budgets. So, and then they and make sure you know what it is if you're running the ads because they've been updating quite frequently over the last 2 months. So, do you think they're a full ad product yet?
How to say this? I think about a year ago, there were a little kid playing in the sandbox with like Tonka toys, pretending to be a construction worker. I think now they've graduated to being a an apprentice or a first year worker, driving like a bobcat around around a job site. They're not driving the full bulldozer, and they certainly haven't graduated to like a Caterpillar dump truck. But they are not the little kid in the sandbox playing with Tonka toys anymore.
Yeah, they're almost up to actually having enough functionality to make it worth it to test ads. I've told clients previously, there's not enough
Do they got the
features and
traffic?
functions.
Yeah. Do they
Yeah,
got the
for
traffic
to
yet, even?
no, they have a 300, they have a 365th, I can't say it right, of what Google does as far as traffic. But they do have
So.
traffic, and it does, I do understand if people run ads, it is converting, just, not a lot.
Okay. Right now, for me, that would still be a effort versus reward
Yes.
calculation.
Yeah, I'd add it as a secondary, not like the primary focus for sure.
Okay. So we have a segment we call from the abyss, mostly because we're standing beside this really big hole that if we all fall into, it's going to be awfully, awfully hard to pull out of. And even looking into this awfully big hole, you begin to, feel the weird vibes off of it. If you look into the abyss, you become the abyss, they say. And I live north of the United States. I live in Canada, and we get to look down at the politics that are happening in America and desperately hope it doesn't come here. And of course, that's impossible given we live in a, communicative world, and the corporo fascism or the techno fascism that's happening in the United States is a global movement. And so, yeah, it's happening up here. We have our like mega maple folks who want to limit the rights of the many so that the few can have dominance or power over. One of them is Toby Lutke, the CEO of the mega e-commerce platform Shopify. Toby Lutke, who isn't taken seriously up here as a political voice in any way whatsoever, is proposing that this is something I think that the Americans should be way more concerned about than Canadians, because again, Lutke isn't considered credible as a political voice. That wealthy people should have more rights. Voting rights than low income people. In fact, he suggests stripping voting rights from some people and giving those votes to the ultra wealthy.
Yeah, he actually proposed, I don't know if it's in the article we have here, but I saw it yesterday, that if you do not pay taxes, you get all your taxes back, or you're just exempt. You should not have the right to vote at all. We're back to the US original must be a property owner to vote kind of situation, just in the modern digital billionaire, trillionaire class. They have said this here too in the United States, the same crowds he runs in, I'm sure, because he has the same ideology and tweets about like Musk and those people, according to the article here, that he is representative of ideas that in the United States with people who do actually have access to the government. And the right wing here has also mentioned things like household voting, where it's part of Project 2025, which guides a lot of this administration, that only the male in the household should be able to vote. Things like that. So it is a concern.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of these ideas that I don't like giving the light of day. It's worth it. I think it's important that people know they exist. But again, in Canada, Toby is considered a brilliant entrepreneur and an essential part of the national economy. And Shopify, he's actually measurable in gross domestic product. But he's not a political thinker in any way, shape, or form. He does want to move, sorry, Doge movement in Canada. And again, I think he misunderstands how Canada works. We have equalization formulas that make life much easier for low-income people, and we work that out through our tax systems. There's a lot of low-income people in Canada who don't pay taxes. In fact, they receive quarterly subsidies from the federal government, not in the way of food stamps or anything, just cash in the bank, and that's the kind of thing that he actually wants to eliminate. He doesn't care about voting rights. He cares about eliminating Canada's sense of universality, where the idea that everybody is absolutely equal under government programs, and the idea of subsidization, of equalization, where you'd try to make life as affordable as possible for low-income people, so we don't have massive wealth gaps, as our president in the United States, distorting our political perceptions.
Well, according to a CBC article, Luque, you say Luque is his name, right?
Toby Lusquet.
Yeah, he responded on X to a former TD Bank executive, Eric Thor, who suggested an electoral system of weighted voting proportional to the amount of income tax you pay, from 0 votes for people who don't pay income tax to 5 votes for anyone paying 500,000 or more. But also, if you have a pension or you're a retiree, you don't get to vote either because now you're dependent. Like a child.
Well,
Like it's
again,
just, yeah. But in the US,
these.
this does have weight. There are voices in the Republican Party who echo similar
In the
thoughts. Yeah.
US, there are low-income people misguided enough to vote for this kind of stuff. I don't know what to
Yeah.
say.
I do think, oh, go ahead. Yeah.
This isn't going to get very far in Canada. Again, the assault is on the concept of universality and the concept of equalization, not so much on voting rights. There's a hidden agenda here, but they're not going to have a lot of success. The right wing in Canada is not taken, the far right in Canada, I should say, is not a credible voice. In America, they are the government. In Canada, they are absolutely not credible. They exist. And they're annoying as hell, but they're not credible.
The issue, though, in addition to this, though, is we know we have this issue with the AI systems and social media and all facets of tech now. Where do you go? Right? There isn't an easy replacement for Shopify. There are other platforms, but not an easy replacement that's easy to use for the average person who's running a Shopify store. So if they find this objectionable, it's like, but where do people go? And I really feel there's this need that hasn't been seen by the people who invest yet, that there's a need to have neutral platforms where the CEO is not saying, let's strip everybody's voting rights, right? Like we have similar things that came out of the head of other people in the United States in the tech world. I just feel like I just really want alternatives. So I could say to a client, sure, you don't want to be there anymore. That's great. We can just send you over here. And we just don't have them yet.
I'd want to suggest something like WordPress, but WordPress is not enterprise level. WordPress is, I mean, WordPress, you can run a fairly large business off of WordPress, but Shopify is
So the
Adobe Suite. That's big players, like massive companies,
and
and small ones as well.
there's WooCommerce, but it's not as easy to use as Shopify.
Yeah, did you
So
remember Aaron Wall? The one of the
I
original
didn't know him,
SEOs, Aaron
no.
Wall?
Yeah, no, I know he'd helped develop
He helped
BigCommerce,
develop
yeah.
BigCommerce to be a SEO-friendly environment. It helps if you have developers working with you with BigCommerce. But then again, in Shopify, it also helps if you have developers. It's much
Yeah.
more versatile. So I'd say BigCommerce is a
Yeah,
viable alternative.
BigCommerce, WooCommerce, but there's just not a lot. You still have a
Yeah.
lot of, yeah.
Matt Mullenweg may be going crazy and be all autocratic, but I don't think I think he still believes in fundamental human rights. Honestly, I don't think he's a fascist.
But
He's
still,
just
usually
nuts.
use a plugin for your store on WordPress. You don't usually code it from scratch, so. It's yeah,
So,
it just wants somewhere else to go.
Toby's a goof, but people can be assured that most Canadians think he's a goof. So,
That's a good thing.
and by the way, up in Canada, goof is a pretty serious word.
Okay, yeah,
We're
that's
real.
the same US. It's kind of an
Oh, then
op.
that'll if you say it in the wrong place, goof will get you killed. I'm not
Oh,
kidding you.
okay.
Okay. Oh, this is back to our fun story from last week, OpenAI's rogue agent that truly messed over Hugging Face. Didn't
And did
stop
exactly what
there.
it was told to do.
Oh yeah,
Remind people.
well,
Yeah,
no, it
because I
didn't
hear
do
a
what it
lot
was
of.
told to do. It solved the problem it was presented with, and it made
Yes,
its
that's what I mean.
own
Yes, that's what I mean.
paths.
But the prompt told it to act the way it acted. So it's because there's all these, people talking on like social or TV, and they're like, oh, it's just so powerful. It did what it was told to do. It just followed the path of least resistance.
And that's still a very, very powerful tool that figured out how
Yes,
to
oh,
do all of
very
this. And that's
powerful.
totally
Yeah.
cool to call it powerful. Really. Although you gotta keep in mind, Sam Altman considers the word power a marketing device.
By the way, I found the best analogy. I don't know if you saw me post it on Facebook. There's something, this slime mold, a slime something, orange slime, has no brain, no neurons, no ability to think, and yet when you put it in a maze, it will find its way out of the maze because of path of least resistance. And I was like, that is a perfect analogy because
It
they don't
has to
know how it
grow.
happens. Yeah, they don't know how it happens. But it will fill the maze, but it will find its way out of the maze, which is very similar to this kind of concept.
Well,
So,
actually, maybe it's just process of elimination. The thing fills the
yeah,
maze and gotta find its way out.
exactly. Yeah. I
This,
just
on
think
the
it's
other
interesting.
hand, like will the pink slime fill all the
Orange.
crevices of the maze? Or the orange
It
slime, will it
can.
fill all the crevices of the maze before finding its way out?
I don't know, always the picture and video, yes, but that doesn't mean that's how it always works.
Apparently, the autonomous OpenAI agent made dozens of unique moves and actions, or took dozens of unique moves and actions, including creating its own script to accomplish stuff. Like it programmed its a way out of a problem.
Yeah, and it also hit three other firms
Who
that
else
I
did it
know
screw over? Who else did it go after?
of. Model Labs, an AI infrastructure company, and then there were three others, and I don't know the names. I'd have to look at the Hugging Face
Do we know
OpenAI
what it
article.
did when it was there?
No, most of what it did, it has not been released so far, at least. I haven't seen anything written. I've seen headlines that say they're going to tell me. But then when I read the story, they don't actually tell me.
According to the article in ZDNet, to my eyes, it looks like it should be ZNet. In ZDNet, the article goes on to say OpenAI AI has acknowledged that accounts of three other firms were attacked, we don't know which companies they are. So
Yeah,
there were three other companies, we just don't know the names yet.
and also they did release that a little further down in an article from OpenAI, their own article on it, that it did manage to get credentials, and the model searched and found successful ways to gain access to secret information that could use to quote cheat the evaluation. But that's kind of like a I can never say that word,
Anthropomorphizing
anthropomorphizing.
the
Yeah, because it didn't cheat, it just found data that helped it solve the problem it was told to solve. So,
I think we need to be able to look at language with two different lenses, and one of the lenses is the lens of intent. Humans do stuff for a reason. And I know it doesn't seem that way most of the time, but we really do things for a reason.
yes,
AIs do things because they were prompted to do a process.
it's an orange slime. Although the orange slime is unprompted, but
But
still.
there's no intent there. There's no intent with the
No
orange
intent.
slime other than to continue growing, which was its
Yes.
directive. There's no choice being made exactly. So the AI will do the most efficient thing or move the most efficient ways. And so it looks like it's choosing between a bunch of different options. And in a way, it is. But choosing is a weird word because that implies intent.
Intent.
There's no intent
Yeah.
there. So we need to think of these words differently when talking about AI, realizing with this overlap, sort of like an overlay that you might be put on a slide, that the word intent has to be considered or absolutely rejected, not considered.
Yeah, and the words like cheat also intent. So it's basically the orange slime who is given a directive and it's just finding its path through the maze. And eventually it finds the one of least resistance and it does what it's told to do.
But in this case, because it did break things that are rules, and we have AIs doing things in our names, and here's where honestly I think that the language can apply, because if I have AI agents out there doing stuff, and one of them does stuff that if a human did it would be illegal, the action itself was probably going to be considered under law still illegal.
Well, we know that
You know,
that's
because it was doing
Meta
it in
did.
my.
Meta did that. We're going to find out because Meta fired all those people, 8,000 people. Most of those people were protected by law, people on family leave or disabled or out, with a because they're pregnant or whatever reason. And so the AI did it without any intervention from humans, which I'm guessing Facebook is going to say means we didn't. We're not legally responsible because the AI did it. But I think it's going to be found in court
There will be
that
no
they
question
are,
in court that Meta's responsible for that. Absolutely.
And they are being sued currently for that. So,
But you, Christine, one person, and you want to have an interaction with your insurance agent and you want lower rates, and you've instructed your agents, your bot, to go to the insurance companies and find the lowest rates. And as part of the way it decides, solves the problem for you, gives you the answer it knows you want. It goes and breaks in and mixes and matches stuff around, and maybe nefariously finds a way to do a lower rate like they used to do subprime mortgages.
and it could do that.
Did
But
you
even.
break the law in that instance, or did the AI break the law on your behalf? I think you broke the law. Personally, I
Well,
think that's how it has to come out.
I have a feeling this is a gray area we're going to find out about because, as we know from nefarious actions, that hackers were able, like we said in the country of Mexico in the past, able to convince a chatbot to get godlike permissions to the chatbot it was talking to, and it stole 150 million records. So, what if your chatbot decides, oh, I can get this lower rate for you by hacking the system? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm just saying
Well,
we
the
could do all
Columbia
sorts of
Music Club's going to be really pissed about that.
exactly. So yeah, there's not a case yet that sets responsibility for the AI, and that is going to have to be set with precedent because it's in the gray area of the law, but it'll happen very soon because, like we said, even with the Meta case, people got fired who it was illegal to fire. So.
Well, don't let this be you. Accept higher insurance rates. This message approved by
Exactly.
the White House.
Exactly.
Sorry. This message approved by Elon Musk.
Well,
Somehow.
So this next story is interesting. I put it in here not as an update, just because the update includes SEO, good SEO. So remember how we did the story last week and all those hundreds of thousands of chats that got leaked to the internet and
Those
Google
were
picked them up?
OpenAI, were they not, or were they Claude?
They were Claude this time. It's happened with Claude in the past and OpenAI in the past. Like
Yeah.
when we tell these stories, I think sometimes I hear them on the news. It sounds like it's the first time it happened. I'm like, no, we covered
So
this like multiple times already.
apparently, this was a preventable injury.
Yeah, so Google, you know, their comment is basically, hey, we didn't do anything. You left it open for us to crawl and index. And that is true. Google's bots aren't out there deciding which sites to crawl and index, you know, other than you tell it to crawl or index you. But they
When they say don't be evil, remember, it's all bot driven now. There's no intent.
it's really true. If I have a site that I'm developing, I put a passcode on it. Or I prefer passcode, but I can put a no index tag on there. But you can't put a no index tag and a robot's text directive not to crawl the URLs, like index the URLs, because it doesn't work that way. So Google's
Wouldn't
going to crawl all your URLs and not necessarily read the page. And that means your no index was never seen.
yeah, wouldn't every incident of a conversation with your AI bot generate its own URL?
Yes, and they probably put in the RT, don't index these URLs, and then Google would have just crawl the URLs. But they also put a no index thinking that protected them from having the page indexed as well, which it doesn't because Google can't read the page when you put a disallow in the robots text file.
Anybody who is ever thinking of applying for a job at like Anthropic or Perplexity or something, this is the kind of stuff you're going to get faced with. That's kind of fascinating because you'd have to think about this, yeah? How
Yeah,
does
and
each process happen, and what does that mean? The way Google crawlers will treat the open web.
exactly, because they'll crawl URLs if it's in the RT disallow, and then I'll index it in Google and it says we can't read the meta description. It won't show the description in Google search results. But if you also put a no index thinking, well, I protected it from reading the page, you haven't because it's not reading the page. So it can't read the code that says no index this page. So if you're going to no index a page or a site, it has to be just no indexed. You cannot put the disallow in the robot text file, or the
Yeah.
URLs will get indexed.
Bottom line, for the majority of our listeners, that I imagine this is the similar issues would exist at any other chat bot, including some of the smaller ones. I think I have to assume that their chats may well be, if not available through search, at least crawlable by search crawlers.
And it's happened multiple times that they've gotten released. So never assume your stuff is private.
Yeah,
When
being
you're using released chats, yeah.
yeah, that's pretty scary.
Yeah. And apparently Google's like, and we weren't the only search engine that indexed you guys. So so in the future, make sure you have an SEO involved in your process is really the story here.
So, Mythos clipped Hawk's wings, huh?
Yeah, this I didn't understand this title at first, and I was like, oh, so they it's from Ars Technica. Mythos attacked a third round PQC algorithm candidate and puts it out of commission. The
So this
candidate was
is
Hawk. Hawk.
Hawk is a quantum-resistant cryptography algorithm. In
Yes.
other words, this algorithm was so tight, so protected that a quantum computer would have a hard time burning through it, figuring it out,
Yeah, and by the way, we should
attacking it.
before we talk about the Mythos part, we should let people know this is Ars Technica story, that there are a couple caveats, like outcomes were incremental. They didn't just break the crypto system that people, it wasn't like they could go out today and break your crypto system, especially protecting crypto. And then they tested weakened versions. And then also the underlying primitives, meaning the underlying mathematical problems that form the basic building blocks of crypto systems, remain safe at least for now. But
For
it did
now,
kill Hawk.
yep.
Yeah.
The Anthropic's Mythos found flaws in the Hawk algorithm that I guess, as Christine said, didn't render it useless, but rendered
Yeah.
it insecure, ergo broken.
So from Ars Technica, a quantum-resistant cryptography algorithm that was under construction as an official U.S. standard has been taken out of the running after an Anthropic security model helped find a flaw that rendered it broken. The algorithm is known as Hawk. It's a digital signature scheme designed to withstand future attacks from quantum computers, which are coming soon. Hawk had survived two rounds of testing by NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, for evaluating the security of post-quantum cryptographic algorithms, PQC. PQC, I can't speak. Through widespread testing, Hawk was in the third round of testing designed to catch precisely the kinds of flaws Mythos helped uncover. So Hawk is
Well,
dead. Sorry,
Hawk
Hawk.
is dead, but you know what? Long live the process. The process worked. He went through it went through three rounds of testing, and in the third round of testing, they found flaws that said, "Hey, our brilliant solution needs to be rethought."
Yeah,
So, Hawk is dead, but long live the process, eh?
And then real quick, the how Anthropic did it, just a brief quote. To find the attack, Claude Mythos preview worked semi-autonomously in an agentic harness. Agentic harness is the new word for guardrails. With occasional human guidance and non-technical direction, Mythos found the attack after an extensive literature review to understand the state of the art and substantial mathematical reasoning and computational experiments. After finding the attack, Mythos implemented an end-to-end verification pipeline to convince itself and the human operator of the attack's correctness. So there you go. It read stuff and figured it out.
Just to confirm, agentic harness means guardrails.
It's a new word for guardrails, basically, that you put a
Every Gooter in
harness.
the audience is so disappointed.
There was a great article on LinkedIn yesterday where the guy compared it to horses, like the agentic AI and
Oh,
horses
they're
and
back.
how you use the harness. It was very, very good. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Okay. This is in the marketing speak of OpenAI's president Greg Brockman. Okay, OpenAI is making a quote unquote family of devices, so you can carry ChatGPT with you and talk to it all the time.
God.
Remember a couple of weeks ago we reported on a little cube-like device that kind of looked like a court reporter's a court stenographer's writing device, but it was made for programmers or developers.
Yes.
That was an OpenAI thing that is built to bring AI models to developers on the fly, like as in a portable device. Okay, so working on any other working in conjunction with any other device that's running the AI model. They want to do the same thing with other physical tools. We were speculating also a couple of weeks ago about some Star Trek badge you could wear that you talk to, and all of our computers would suddenly be cloud existing devices with agents doing stuff for us as we asked them to do it. This is the OpenAI concept of what computing will look like X number of years from now.
Now, of course, they are involved in two lawsuits right now on the first two devices, which is a trademark name and then an Apple employee who stole secrets and brought them to OpenAI. So, yeah. But Mr. Brockman said that it would be built for the AI era and maximally useful, just something that people really want in their personal work lives. Gen Z is completely rejecting AI. Most people don't like AI right now. I'm not sure if most
That's,
people
you know
find
what?
it
This isn't what's happening today. This is what's happening 5 to 10 years from now.
We'll see.
Honestly, people may be rejecting the threat that AI is going to make them stupid and take their jobs from them. And they should reject it. Both those concepts.
And actually, this could involve psychosis because in-depth talking to models can invoke psychosis because of dopamine and
I have a
oxytocin.
really, again, moving forward when our generation and maybe all the way down to Gen Z have made all the incredibly stupid cases, mistakes, being the guinea pigs that we are. I honestly believe we will have a Star Trek universe where
No,
people do talk to.
Star Trek's
I
different.
don't see why not. We're gonna have to get rid of a whole bunch of concepts that are sacred cows to people like you and me. Privacy is an example. Privacy is deadly important to me.
My
But
friend
you
and
can't have
I,
Star Trek with it.
my friend and I had a discussion like probably 10 years ago about privacy and younger generation. He's like, they won't care about it, and I said, I think they will, and they do care about it. So that hasn't gone away. I think it's an innate thing to not be monitored all the time,
They
but.
care. Their concept of privacy is different than yours, though, because they've had different parameters
Sure.
from which to live from. Take away a few more privacy rights, and the next generation will understand privacy from another kind of perspective, and it shifts and shifts and shifts as time goes on. That's
Either
how
way,
technology does that for us.
I don't see these taking off. We'll see, but I don't see these taking off. Like even the glasses from Meta are getting huge, huge blowback because of the recording of
Because
people.
of the creep factor.
Yeah, then this other
But
creep
if you're
factor
an
too.
architect, the glasses from Meta could be insanely useful on the job site.
Sure, there's
If you're
always a
a
use
doctor
case.
or a surgeon, it could be incredibly useful. But if you're
Well,
a creep walking around the beach, well,
okay.
people are going to look at you funny.
And sometimes we say, oh, but it's useful in this way, so let's ignore the rest. But people aren't ignoring the rest anymore.
Well, and
So.
that's how to say this. People shouldn't ignore the rest. We shouldn't ignore the creep on the beach. We should call them out. Hey, you, don't do that. You're abusing people. But the architect should have this incredible tool that makes their job better.
No.
I don't see why
No.
not.
If I had a tool that went out and caused harm to people because a small segment of people find it useful, it shouldn't be available to everybody.
So I was sitting here the other morning, Wednesday morning, sitting in, or sorry, Tuesday morning at my computer, and there was a massive traffic accident outside. A car ran over a pedestrian, and that pedestrian died. We shouldn't ban cars. I mean, I think we should, to be honest, but we're not gonna.
That's not similar in any way. Let's
Why?
move on. We've talked taking too long on this. We've got many stories to cover.
We do. Okay. So OpenAI is making this, sees itself making this series of devices. The important part of this story, I think, is this is where they see the future going. And conceptually, we should think about that kind of stuff. Google's privacy, quote unquote, privacy preserving age verification system is coming to the Play Store.
It's
I
interesting
guess.
though. They're not doing it like other people. They're
So
not,
the age verification
yeah.
happens as, to get in the door
Yeah, but
rather
it's not,
than as you use.
yeah. So this is a story from Ars Technica. So in other countries, we know, like Australia did this, like age verification for social media. And it's been a disaster. It just doesn't really work. But in this case, they're not requiring an ID or selfie verification. It's connected to existing Family Link app, which I don't have because I don't have kids. The idea is parents will set the age ranges for the kids and their accounts. And then you might say like 16 to 17 years old and allowing apps to tailor experiences and content for teenagers. The ranges are dynamic and may change as users get older. So a kid who's 13 may be in the same app content bracket for a few years before hitting the next level. So not just to do it just by year, but also by set. And it's not mandatory for child accounts. It's fully opt-in and can be turned off at any time. And then they began testing Play Age Signals API last year because states like New York this year are going to put age restrictions on certain types of social media apps. So they've been working on this for a while. I
Actually,
do
you know
think
what? This
it's
sounds like a good system. I don't.
I do.
I have some
Yeah.
critiques, but they're not serious.
No, I agree because it's the family deciding whether they should be blocked and also the age range. So you could have a kid who's very mature for their age and you're fine with them at 14 having access. Or you could have a kid at 60 who's very immature for their age and you might set their age lower as a parent so they get less of the more adult level content. So, yeah,
And.
and it's opt-in, which is, I think, important. So.
And okay, I mean, I don't want to sound like the authoritarian oldster that I actually am, but this is tied to the owner of the cell phone accounts, and chances are you own your kid's cell phone account, so
Exactly.
you have a lot of control here.
Exactly. So it won't keep determined minors away from apps, of course. But in the other system, by using age verification and IDs, they haven't been able to keep them out of it either. So So I think it's a good system. I don't know how they're going to work with states that make it mandatory that kids can't have access to certain apps, but that might be the app's responsibility and not the Play Store.
Well, maybe, I mean, maybe once the authority is triggered in the download, that could be transferred over into a message in the app, a handshake that is given to the government's authorization server. That would make sense. It's simple enough.
Yeah, simple enough.
Okay. ChatGPT has gained access to Yelp reviews, ratings, and photos. So if you're writing a Yelp review, rating the food, or taking pictures of your experience, it's training. Not for you, for the AI.
And Yelp is licensing it to ChatGPT, so they're making a little bit of coin on it. It doesn't prevent Yelp from licensing data to other companies. They've done this with Google in the past. So, yeah, I mean, it's funny though. If I go to Yelp, I have to download the app to be able to look at any of this stuff. So apparently, I might do better going to, another site to do to look at it. Oh, yeah, so it's for local information, and I'm sure that'll be helpful for people who use it.
So Yelp used to have a licensing content with Google, but that
Yeah.
relationship fell apart. And now, over Google's local search practices, like where Google pretty much tried to be Yelp,
Yeah,
and now
they
Yelp is
preference.
suing Google, for favoring its own results in local search.
And it's a pretty easy lawsuit usually because they've been found guilty of it so many times at this
So
point.
remember we were talking last week and the week before how companies are finding more value outside the Google universe than inside the Google universe. Yelp had already been pushed across that border, but I think this is another example where Yelp has now found a brand new revenue stream that it wasn't getting from Google Local, because Google Local had muscled it out.
Yeah, I agree.
Google. If people aren't making the choice voluntarily and you've muscled them out, then they got to go somewhere. They'll find other revenue streams. But you, honest to goodness, you're your own worst enemy in so many ways.
Yeah, really, yeah. Google, I feel Google's jumped the shark a bit, a lot in the last few years, last 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so Substack contributors are mad at a company's
Yeah.
decision to imagine use AI to detect AI generated writing.
Yeah. It's
Be
a hundred. Go ahead, sorry.
oh, it's getting way too many false positives. A lot of writers who swear up and down, like they swear on their mothers that they are not using AI, are being tagged as AI generated, and they're not calling it a witch hunt.
Yeah, so the people at Substack were given a no tolerance policy for AI contributions, but they also, a lot of them say, well, I use AI to help me write. I'm not posting AI writing, but I'm using it for, research or outlines or that kind of thing. So, I feel it's kind of like, hey, it's like Lucy pulling the football from Charlie Brown, that they were doing something and now they're just told they're not allowed to. Plus, they are very inaccurate. I don't. Supposedly, there's one now that might be pretty good, but I haven't had a chance to research it yet. But this one tool is called Pangram. You want to say Pentagram, but it's Pangram. It's built into Substack, and you can scan your writing. Funny thing, and this was a year ago, so things might have improved. But I put in AI writing into a detector to see what it did. And then I started removing the AI and putting my writing in it, and it kept going up as AI writing.
Really?
The more of my own content I put in it, the more the detector said it was AI. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Well, you were just replacing sections of the writing. It had
Yeah, whole sections, like paragraphs. Yeah.
okay, because I was going to say, remember, AI will structure their paragraphs in a certain way to make it's very dull, almost like university standard, but duller. So that's a sure tell.
Yeah. But it's just interesting because there's none that are that accurate. So I think it's a pretty harsh penalty, like the zero tolerance policy for it. But I also understand their desire not to have a bunch of AI Substack blogs on there because they want good content on their
Well,
platform.
yes, Substack's value proposition is they are the above average writing. You want good contact, you come here, or content, you come here.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't want it to be eye slop. And I think a lot of people now can start to, like we can, because we read it all the time. You start to detect the eye slop just by the read of it.
So who's gonna be better at this? Substack is using a automated system to catch AI content. LinkedIn is using a button that reads "Seems like AI slop." Who's better at
Yeah.
this? People pushing the button or Substack systems?
Well, you know what bothers me about this one, though? Is the weaponization of it, right? Because AI, okay, LinkedIn ranks in Google now, which means there are going to be people, they're going to weaponize this AI slop button to get people's stuff taken down or reduced in the algorithms. So I don't know that self-reporting, people reporting AI slop is probably the best method for
We're
this.
never ever going to have nice things again, are we?
No, but I mean, this is like SEO year 2000. If you put something up that can be weaponized to take
There
down
will be.
content that's ranking, it's
There will
going
be.
to happen. Yeah, it's going to
Yeah.
happen. So it's a negative. It's called negative SEO for people who don't know. And in rank and LinkedIn ranks very well in Google. If I write an article, often it shows up immediately and it'll stay there for a few weeks in the top placements. So yeah, so there is a problem with AI slop though on LinkedIn. People have been complaining about it publicly for a while.
Horrible.
Now, yes, but we'll
I
see.
mean,
It's a
LinkedIn was a place you could go to for good content on, well, for us on SEO or on AI, and now it hit and miss.
yeah, and
I bet you
it's
it's the
kind of,
same in every other profession too.
and you know what? Also, LinkedIn is using Pangram to also decide if things are AI. So we need to look into Pangram. That's a big. It's a big deal.
Well, okay. Well,
Yeah.
we will keep our eyes peeled for information on or about Pengram.
Yeah.
But keep your eyes open and your gut open when you're looking at LinkedIn or Substack. Who's policing it better?
And also, if you are an SEO and using LinkedIn to help get placements for your clients, keep an eye on them because people might decide to use bots to mass report you. So.
That, you know what? So now it's incumbent on LinkedIn to figure out if it's a bot attack happening or not.
Well, I just mean bots matter, making accounts to report
No,
you.
indeed. No, well,
Yeah.
yeah, so false click activity.
Yeah, exactly. And that would, yeah, false click activity. Better word for it.
Okay, so jumping stories. Elon Musk is suing Minnesota. Well, XAI, Elon Musk's XAI is suing the state of Minnesota because Minnesota has introduced law banning nudification technology. We're not talking about publishing nude photos. We're talking about the technology that makes the nude photos.
Oh, I didn't know it had an actual name. Of course, it does now.
Nudification. Yes.
Notification technology. Oh my gosh. Yeah, so basically, notification technology takes people who are clothed and makes them not clothed by using AI to fill in the blanks based on, how the clothing fits, things like that. But Minnesota banned it. And, it's Grok has been known to make CSAM images, which is children, and then also to undress adults. And it's been a really big problem for them. And they kind of work on it, but it never really gets fixed. But the Minnesota law, well, it says there's a penalty of $500,000 per violation.
Yeah.
Just pretty massive in a good way. I mean, it shouldn't be using nudification. I can't believe I live in a time where there's something called
There's a
nudification
yes, there's a word
technology.
called nudification.
Right? My gosh. But so he's suing on the First Amendment, I believe, free speech. So I think
Now,
it's pretty
this
awful
is going
he's
to be a really
suing.
interesting one, and I'm actually pretty sure, I'm sorry to say, he's probably going to win.
Yeah, probably.
You can write a poem. You can write an erotic poem. You can write a description of somebody else's body. You can draw a description of somebody else's body. It might even look like hieroglyphs, or it might look like a Rembrandt. And there's no law against any of that. The moment you start representing in public somebody else, especially somebody else naked, that's against the law. Clearly, no question about it. There's zero, there's so much precedent saying that's against the law that he would win in court, or that the state would win in court on that precept. But to say you can't create the image for private use, I'm pretty sure that the courts will rule in Musk's favor,
I'm
as
not sure.
odious as that is.
Remember, we had a, and I don't remember enough about it to quote it accurately, but I do remember we had a story probably 6 months ago or so where private use was banned when it was came to the nudification of people, because that isn't your, it's
Because
their
you have no
body that.
consent from that person to do that.
Yes, exactly. Because there are
And
cases of revenge porn which were occurring because of these nudification technologies. Nudification, oh my God.
well, and that's, again, that's when they share it publicly. If it's revenge porn, it's being shared.
Yeah, oh
And
yes, of course.
that's against the law.
It,
Unquestionably, that's
that
against the
already
law.
was, right. But they were also saying that you cannot make it for your own use. So.
I would like to see that stand up in court. I honestly would like to see that stand up in court, but then that would open a whole jar of a can of worms about what you can and cannot write, or paint.
Well, no, because this is using technology to take clothing off somebody. Yeah, not that you're painting somebody. There's a difference in that. So there
You
might be
know
a
what? If
fine
the courts hold
distinction.
that, I'd be very interested.
Yeah, we should look it up. We did do a story on it, so I'll have to find out what story it was.
I can't believe
Yeah.
I just argued in Musk's favor on this.
So
Amazing, eh?
the. Yeah, and so the law is distinct from state to state, and this is AP News. And federal laws that outlaw deep fakes, AI-generated sexually explicit images of people without their consent. So that's the laws that they're using. Those laws typically penalize the people who use the tools to make the images, not the makers of the tools themselves. But in the federal Take It Down Act that passed last year, requires websites and apps to implement a process to remove those images. So basically, if you create it, it shouldn't be allowed to be published.
No, and again, constitutionally, I think there's zero question about that. You're absolutely right. But I do think that there will be a constitutional question of private
Oh,
use.
sure. Yeah, they'll
And
use the First Amendment. Yeah, this is what he's going to do.
okay, so this one is also involving Elon Musk's ex. Elon has finally, he said he was going to do it. He launched X Money with a Visa-backed debit card.
Invite only.
Yep, invite only. Interesting that that Visa credit card is backing up, is supporting it. It's usable at ATM, 6% yield, and real-time transaction. That's the value
6%.
proposition there.
Also, though, you have to be a premium member, $8 a month, but you have to have a deposit of 1600 in order to cover X premium services costs. I don't know if they're just making money off your money or if they're expecting you to pay 1600 to use it. I don't know. Doesn't say. I would just stay as far away as possible. Like, he's so corrupt and he's so dishonest. You don't know what's really going to happen with this in the end. I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole.
I don't know if this if deposits here are covered, are federally insurable or not.
That's a good question.
Banking services are provided by the Cross River Bank. But again, I
Yeah,
don't
that's.
know if these are insurable deposits or not. I do know that everybody who invested bunches of money in SpaceX, which XAI has recently merged with, are in trouble today, or at least feeling like they're in trouble today. Everything may change, but they lost a lot of money on that IPO. And Musk has this habit of creating financial black holes.
Yeah, and also like people invested in the Trump crypto coin, all of them have lost their money except a few investors at the top who made a bunch. So yeah, I would just stay away from it. Like, you have better options that are backed by better people and real banks. So, but up to you. I would not touch it. That's up to everybody else. We already have enough services, and if you want 6% yield, just put it in a nice index fund. So you'll get more than 6%.
This next story feels really counterintuitive. I'm just going to report it straight, but according to
Yeah,
a
it does.
study that was released in psychology.org,
Fizz.org, I think.
phys.org,
Yeah.
reading news on social media for 2 weeks improves knowledge and fake news recognition.
Yeah, it's a study in a Nature Human Behavior Study, investigated the effects. This is from Fizz.org. It's a part of Science, Science Direct, I think it is. Where people the it had 3,395 participants, and it was the effects of following news organizations on social media platforms such as Instagram and WhatsApp. This was from France and Germany. It wasn't in the US. But the participants were randomly assigned to either follow a news or non-news account, and the results revealed that just 2 weeks of following two or more news channels led to noticeable gains in participants' current affairs knowledge, trust in news, and ability to spot fake news from real stories. Which actually I could see, because if they had them follow a couple of real news sites, right, they weren't just randomly getting fed junk in the algorithm, then they were seeing real stories, and the real news sites would also report on the same thing pretty similarly. So when something that's a clickbait headline meant to like enrage, engage you, it would sound weird because you already saw the news stories. Because the biggest thing about disinformation is, one of the biggest ways to fight it is be the first one to the person with the real news and the facts. And then the disinformation doesn't work as well. We already know that. So that kind of backs up what this study found, where people were getting the real news and then they might get fake news, but they've already seen the real news. And so the fake news is not as effective. So that makes sense because you've already seen
If
factual information. Go ahead, sorry.
people would follow the real news, and one of the problems with particularly in the United States is a deep-seated distrust in institutions that seems to be a trend in society right now, and one of those institutions is the news media. Americans just don't trust the mainstream news media. If they were exposed to verifiable, credible news, and then followed news in the social media, they would be better able to discern what was real and what is fake. Yeah,
Yeah,
interesting. I wish that could happen. I would love to see it happen. I just don't see the American public deciding that they trust credible news sources anytime soon.
now it would be interesting though to challenge people to follow two news sources. Don't follow anything else. We'll give you a list of real news sources. Just follow these two of them, and then whatever else you're doing is fine. And to see if that would change people's perceptions, because this is a more controlled study, not out in the wild like that.
I mean, a couple of years ago, they would take people and limit their access to Fox News. And after a couple of weeks, the blinders seemed to fall off, and
I had
they
a family
started
member.
coming back from the fantasy land back into the land that most of the rest of us live in or tried to live in until it got trampled over by Fox News viewers.
Yeah. I had a family member, though. They stopped watching him within a couple of months. They were a very different person. So there is something to that. Yeah.
Okay, so in the midst of the AI revolution, all this stuff, ad revenue at Bing is up. Microsoft reported
I
fourth quarter 2026 earnings.
was like, how's Jim going to segue into this one?
Microsoft
Because that's
can't have reported its fourth quarter 2026 earnings yet. It hasn't happened.
you're right. I think, oh, this is a very story. We need to tell them there's a
Okay,
typo or
so
something.
Microsoft has reported its second quarter
Yes.
2026 earnings. That makes
Yes.
that's what they could have reported.
Yes.
Search
Yes.
advertising revenue is up 10%. They're making more money than they were previous quarters. Previous quarter it was up 12%. So they're making more money, but a little bit slower because before that it was up 16%. So it's moving a little slower, but they are still growing. People are still, finding paid ads.
Right. We'd love to see it because we like to have other search engines besides just Google. So
Now,
the earnings release said revenue was 90 billion, increased 18%. Operating income was 40.6 billion, increased 18%. Net income was 35.8 billion, increased 31% on a GAAP basis, and 35 billion and increased 20% on the non-GAAP basis.
bearing in mind, compared to Google, these are very small numbers. But compared to
Yeah.
just about every other ad business out there, they're doing pretty good. 90 billion, it's not a, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, it's still not as good as they were doing in Q1 of 2022, but that was the end of the pandemic when everyone was home and, doing everything online. So I'm still very good. Strong showing. Bing, we like to see it.
Okay, so
Next
according
question.
to the head of Anthropic's Claude Code, Boris Cherney, prompt engineering isn't that important. I mean, prompt engineering isn't that important. There are classes out there that are teaching you how to do prompt engineering.
Yes,
And,
so go
oh,
ahead.
apparently you just have to basically explain what you want, give it a thorough workflow, and let it go.
Yeah, you give it a harder task than you're expecting also. So I sat with Gary Marcus last year at Black Hat. He's one of the originators of this industry. And he was saying like personas are not a thing, over prompting is not a thing. Like this is a year ago, like this week coming up because I'm going next week. So I was like, really? Because everyone was doing like, I'm this person and I'm gonna do this thing, and they were very, very specific. And he's like, no, it doesn't. They don't need you to do all that. It doesn't make any difference for them. So because they're not thinking, they're not sentient. They don't really know what those things are. So I just thought it was really interesting. So apparently, you're supposed to give it basically a slightly harder problem than you want it to solve, and then it will give you the thing. Now you do have to give it some basic direction in the beginning and an outcome. The outcome is more important than the actual specifying. In fact, it says, and this is Roger Monti's article in Search Engine Journal, overspecifying is self-defeating. He remarked that it sounded simple. Cheney replied, is it Cheney? Sorry. And he thinks that people tend to overthink a little bit. His point was that overspecifying is not necessary with today's Claude Code. So he said, I think people tend to over-engineer because I think in a lot of ways we built systems in the past, that's the way you did it. So when I look at engineers who have been coding for a long time, for years or decades, this is a really, really common failure mode. It's trying to overspecify and it's trying to be overly specific and get the model to do the task exactly the way you would have done it. And that's just not way, the way the model works. But I think a lot of people are unlearning this, and it's a journey to unlearn it. It's a journey to kind of figure out how to treat this thing like you would a coworker. So that's where they say they Claude's at now.
Talk with it as little as possible and hope that it doesn't ask too many personal questions.
Well, basically, prompt engineering matters less than giving Claude Code clear instructions and ways to verify its work. Has advanced to the point where many prompt engineering tricks are no longer necessary. It's capable of more than many users realize. This is from the article. Challenge them with Claude with harder
Oh, I
tasks.
see. Okay, you know what? Remembering this, it's trained on everything that people have had it do.
Yes. So just
It's
tell it what you
getting
want to
better
do.
at stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And everything people have been doing to it, it's learned from. Learned is a probably the
So if
wrong word, but
Claude
it
gets
trained on.
kinky, now you know why.
Yeah. Yes. So there you go. So don't overthink your prompts.
Okay. What you might want to think about, well, if you're writing prompts, you're probably not thinking about content. That's another side of the office. But if you are on the side of the office that thinks about content, you might want to think about brand citations, because like about two-fifths of what you write, 40% of what you're writing isn't being sourced properly. They might source it back to a website and stuff, but they're sourcing sentences without sourcing it to the brand. So there's a big blind spot for how people perceive the message that you think you're sending them, because you're sending it on behalf of your brand, but also how you measure visibility in AI search. They're reading a sentence that doesn't identify it with you.
Right. This is from Search Engine Land. It was a study by data from Rightsonic, and that 40% of AI citations didn't name the source brand in the generated answer. So the key findings were 40% didn't mention Go citations, which is where your information was used, but you are not seen. Rates range from 19% to 52% across engines. Perplexity had the highest rate at 52%. Google AI Mode at
Followed by
49%.
Google, huh?
Yes.
And then Google again.
How many times have I said the design of Google's AI Mode and AI Answers is why they steal so many clicks? Google AI Overviews reached 41%. ChatGPT 37%. Gemini Grok and Microsoft Copilot had the lowest rates at 25%, 22%, 19%. When we say Gemini, we mean the app.
That, so interesting, Copilot is the most generous of all of them.
Well, with Grok and Gemini app, not AI or AI Mode or AI Overviews, yeah. So a citation means an AI answer links to your page as a source. It may appear as an inline reference, a footnote, or a link inside a source's panel. A mention is your brand name appears in the generated answer text. So a citation doesn't mean that your brand was seen. Wrightsonic's analysis was of 16 million brand appearances, found that, again, 40% of AI citations did not mention the source brand.
That's a really big deal, 'cause you think you're having an impact when you see that you were mentioned, or that you had a citation, right? You think you're having an impact.
Yeah, and
Maybe
then
you're not.
they differentiate out also a ghost citation looks a bit different. The Wrightsonic page still appears in the sources, but unless the user notices and opens the citation, there's nothing in the answer connecting the finding to the company that produced it, which it trained and it's writing. The sources are just as we've said, this came out of the RAG model. There wasn't something developed called AI search. There was the RAG model to bring in documents to ground the writing to make sure it didn't write crazy things like drink a gallon of your own urine for kidney stones, like Google did at one point. So what it's doing is the RAG model. And so it's not necessarily going to directly link what it writes to the citation because this isn't Google. It's not ingesting it and going, here's what I took it from, and here is the citation. It's like, here are the things grounding my writing to make sure I don't write crazy stuff. And so you may be used as a source, but not appear unless somebody looks at all the sources.
Here's the problem. How do I make sure that the brand gets noted when the sentence gets used to construct a generative answer? I can't write sentences that read like, "As our founder, John Smith of your name here said, good tomatoes make good sauce." I mean, I can't write that in every
Well,
sentence.
and there may not be really a way to do it because they're using like an advanced RAG model. They're just grounding the writing.
Well,
So even though
I
they
think
use you, it doesn't mean you can force it to use your brand or cite you.
there are ways you can, and you're right, you can't make them do anything. We've never been able to make Google do anything,
Well,
or any
no,
of the
in
engines,
Google,
but
no, in Google, we've been able to make
there's
it do
ways
some
to hedge
things.
your bets. Link good internal linking, for instance. If you are writing a piece, you have a page of product content or whatever, and it relates to something else on your website. If you can get some really good anchor text and have a good internal link structure, I think you might have a better chance of getting a brand mention
Well,
or association. No guarantee, like me saying so doesn't mean it'll happen in any way whatsoever. But you're teaching Google or teaching the crawlers to associate X with Y and Z. And you got to give them the tools to make those associations.
And also something that works in Google too is making sure, remember, we're thinking SEO 2000, 2005, right? Make sure the name of your company is near the claim that you're making, or your name of your company is near the product that you so in the sentence,
Well, yeah, but
in
you
the
can only do
page.
that so many times before it
No, I
starts
know,
reading
but
really badly, right?
you don't have to do it a lot of times. But in Google search, you used to have to, but you don't have to do it a lot of times. But cosine relevance, right? The relevance of the two entities to each other also is developed by proximity. People think authority in AI search is like links and stuff. It's not. It's how the entities are structured in the page and the cosine relevance of those structures. So if you want to make sure they see you as the brand that did the study, like in this case, you're not going to say our analysis says, you're going to say, this is an example here, you're going to say Wrightsonic's ghost citation study found, right? So you don't have to mention a lot, but mention it early because they ingest from top down and they don't ingest the whole page. They follow the entity constructions. So make sure you use your most important entities in your opening statements, in your headers, and in your link text. And then there's more in here, but you can't, but I guess all I'm saying is you can't force it to. It's not like in Google Like, I know if I do XYZ, I'm going to show up in number one, and that works all the time. No, it's not like that. It's like we're using this to write from, and we may or may not cite it, but if you at least put your entities close together, you have a better chance of that happening.
Okay. Okay,
Yeah.
so remember a couple of stories back we were talking about how citation and mention are actually two different things that have to be measured two different ways. So Google's got generative AI Search Console data that's offering SEOs, and this data is easily misinterpretable. We
Yes,
As
not that
with most
useful.
data, especially new stuff, as and especially stuff associated with generative AI, quite frequently we get the explanations we want to get rather than an explanation of how the thing actually works. For instance, as we mentioned earlier, a citation means you've been mentioned. The brand's mentioned is a link back to the page. You can identify the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dogs was said by Acme Typewriter Incorporated. You can source that together. A mention, on the other hand, a piece of that great sentence was used in a generative response, and you got a mention, not necessarily a brand recognition. That might get measured by Search Console as the same damn thing. And they're all in the number one position. And you're taking your report to the marketing department, or to even worse, to the C-level. And they're like, "Oh, wow, everything's number one. Good for you." Or, "We should invest money in this. Look, we're getting mentions all over the place."
These are, by the way, this is from an article, Google's Generative AI Search Console Data is a Trap for Marketers, from Dan Taylor in Search Engine Journal. But yeah, I mean, when they rolled that out, I was like, yay. And then I was like, why? There's no click data. There's no information. It does, as you said, rank everything as position one. What does it actually offer? It doesn't really offer any information other than you appeared.
Yeah, you were there.
You were there. That's
And
all
what
we
does
can
that
tell you.
mean?
Nothing. All it means you're there. You can tell your client you were there. But that's about all you can say. You don't know if you're the citation. You don't know if you're an actual text. You don't know if you're a link. You don't know. If you're clicked on, you don't have any real information. Yeah, so it's a marketer's trap because it can, as the article title says, because as Jim just said, you can think that it's telling you something that it's not actually telling you,
Well, and then
right?
you go and you tell other teams this, and they
Yeah.
make their plans accordingly. And this is where it gets funky because now money's involved.
Yeah.
And heaven help you if you misspend your company's money stupidly.
Yes, very, very true. And you're not in position one for everything.
Well, we say that we're data driven. It's one of the great claims of SEO is we are making decisions based on what the data tells us, not what our emotions tell us. Not what our own preferences tell us, but what the raw data is telling us. And this data ain't right.
Yeah, and also because I give you no clicks. Like I use SEO gets, right? I get, by the way, no skin on the game. Anyone who hears me mention it, it's just a really good tool. And they have where I can see the impressions, and clicks really easily in a whole big graph, a whole big table. And it'll say 50 clicks and 200,000 impressions. And I'm like, 50 clicks and 100,000 impressions. I know that's an AI overview, right? I know that that's what that is, because unless you're in news, which has other things that can influence that. So this is not a news site. This is just a company site. So when they're getting 100,000, I know that that person is present. I know that their company is present because I hand check. So I know that's what's happening, but I at least get click data out of that. You don't even get the click data out of the AI report, right? I can assume if I have 100,000 impressions that they were in the AI overview. So
Here's a what kind of assumptions can you make if you have 100,000 products you're tracking? You need good data.
by the way, I just good time to mention, because I don't think we did today, that our sponsor, AudienceKey, has a product grid tracker that will give you that information and also tell you where you are in the product grids. And it's very, very important coming up soon if you have an e-commerce site. And also our
Probably
other
also
sponsor,
worth
Wix.
mentioning that Wix Studio will help you build that product grid into your website.
Exactly. Sorry, folks. We get so excited about the grid, sometimes we forget. But it
Now,
is
you know
actually a
what?
really
It's
good
actually
tool.
really cool to mention them in the middle of the show. They appreciate it more. I
Well,
you can tell by the number of emails they send us and the big fat checks, right?
practical application though, right? You could use it for the product grade to help you measure better.
Absolutely. Okay. Friends, we want to thank our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Audience Key does give you unprecedented look into how you're performing in the grid. And again, Wix Studio has gone out of its way to make website building easy.
Yes, very much so.
Okay,
Okay.
moving along, we are
Almost half of
in
the
a,
Google.
yeah, I'm sorry, sorry. I
Oh,
had a
you're
brain.
good.
We're in a world where half of Google searches are now producing an AI overview.
And
Wasn't it just
climbing.
like 25% like
Not that
3 months, four
long
months ago?
ago. I don't think it's that, but in the last 6 to 8 months, I think it was as low as 25%. Barry says in his article a year ago, it was 13% to 20%.
According to Semrush, about 48% of all queries are now producing overviews.
And similar web says 43%. This is an article on SE, Search Engine Roundtable. Almost
So,
half of Google searchers have AI overviews and climbing.
get those mentions, but even better, get those citations.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of them on desktop, but I think that's because I tried to eliminate them a long time ago. So I do get them in mobile though all the time.
Okay, Google's announced an update to their open knowledge format. There's five new trusted features a consumer of open knowledge format can use to verify five aspects of OKF bundles. Okay, provenance, which is like sources, trust is generated, freshness, a stale after tag, lifestyle, or sorry, life cycle. An attestation. Attested computation. What's attestation? That's what I don't understand.
Well, by the way, I'm gonna back up just a second for people who don't know what the OKF open knowledge format is. It's how organizational knowledge can be shared between AI agents, tools, and teams. So the problem that it solves is there's a need not AI systems often need knowledge that exists outside the model, but the knowledge is often scattered across catalogs, wikis, repositories, shared drives, and other internal systems. Google Cloud's announcement says OKF is meant to address that problem by representing scattered knowledge in a common format. Just so people know what it is, because we just jumped right into OKF, and I realize it's not mentioned that much in the industry. I think we did an article on it a few months ago, like 2 months ago. So, but yes, and so you're asking about attested computation or.
Yeah, the very last one, attestation. This is Google's way of making its own sort of directory to find stuff faster.
Attestation, I believe, is just attested computation for verifying calculations. It's not new. It defines the approved ways to calculate value and provides a way to verify that the calculation was performed in the way that it was supposed to be calculated.
Okay,
That's all.
well. That's the news story. Open knowledge format, five new trust signals. Now available in version 0.2.
0.2, not in version one.
0.2. There is need there is
Not even
this is
version
a
one. Yeah.
pre-release version.
That's so funny. I've never seen 0.2 before.
Well, yeah, so this is the zero des denotes it's not really beta, it's out there, but it's gonna be changed over and over and over again. When you get to one, you have stability.
Yes.
Okay, Google Search will not publish its order of precedence for metadata reconciliation. For instance, what's more important, a 301 redirect signal, a redirect that's on URL A to URL B, but not on URL B? A canonical, is that more relevant or more, should that take
Ooh.
precedent when you're trying to figure out the story of a website? There is obviously a order of operations that Google looks at, but they're not going to let us know, and they're probably not even going to let John
Well,
Mueller know.
I don't even think they can actually. So there's two articles on this one. The second one is they're both, but no, this one's Matt Southern, Search Engine Journal. But basically, in the quote, there's no publicly defined order of precedence for metadata reconciliation here. Because basically they can't really decide what it would be. Like, so I have an instance where I was working with a company and they said, we have the wrong canonical showing all the time, but we don't know where the canonical is coming from. And it turned out they were putting the canonical in the raw HTML, and then in the rendered HTML, when the page created itself, it was React dynamic creation.
And set its
So,
own.
and so Google just took whichever one. It wasn't never a definite. It would take the raw or the rendered, and that's what they're talking about. They would just take whatever it hit first, probably, or what it thought was best. So if you have conflicting metadata, one of the things John says is don't test it. Don't test it. Like test it if it's your own test site, but don't test it like on your client site, and then and resolve the conflicts and make sure you're doing it correctly. So in the canonical case, the raw HTML is what you need. Where you need to put the canonical, it always needs to be in the raw, never in the virtual rendered. So, yeah.
I think that there is a order of operations it wants to follow. Every case is going to be different because every website is going to be
That's what
different.
they mean. Yeah, that's what they were saying, basically.
And Google has to account for that, obviously. But there is a standard protocol that is preferred to follow. If they can't, if you deviate from that, Google will find the right path to follow, the path that tells the story that it can best interpret. I shouldn't say the right path. I say the one I can best interpret.
Yeah, the one it can best interpret it. Yeah, that's correct. So this is a weird one. This was one that was given to John Mueller. And it just says like about the using the unavailable after date because they have like a coupon, I believe, or deal site. And then what happens is that bad if they have like thousands of these. And it just means unavailable after Google is supposed to drop the page after that date, but the page isn't going necessarily away. They might use it again. So in this case, they're told, you know, that's fine, but Google may not know to come back to read the page later at a different time because you told it to forget about it. So you want to make sure that you're deeding your URLs to Google if you're going to be changing it back to a available page.
Okay, so just to get this straight, you're unavailable after you, for one reason or another, you want to change the date on it. You have to resubmit that page to Google, I guess like through Search Console or something, rather than just de waiting for Google to maybe crawl it on its own.
Well, you don't necessarily have to, but it's just a best practice to do something to get Google to note that the page isn't there again. So this is so you don't have like 404s and 410s. So they just put if it's going to be a short-lived listing, unavailable after, and then because it's a classified he was talking about. Sorry, I thought it was a product deal site, but similar. So there's no negative SEO implication other than the fact is when you make the page live again, Google may not crawl it. And if that's the case, you have to make sure it crawls it. So sitemaps are a good way, getting it reindexed in through Search Console is another way.
Okay, so just to confirm, Google sees you when you're surfing. Google is introducing a search box that reads related searches based on your browsing.
And
So
discover, I think, right?
no,
No,
it doesn't
Google
say
Search.
it's in
Sorry.
Discover, it's in Google
Oh, sorry.
Search.
You're right. I thought it was discover. That's another story.
No, this can just, yeah,
Yeah,
this is
you're
just
right.
pop up in Google Search.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know what they do if you don't have history turned on, though. I don't have search history, but I do see these boxes. So I'm not sure where they're beginning it from for me, unless it's in the session
Well, from Santa Claus, who's watching everything,
data.
obviously.
So this is an article in Search Engine Roundtable. It's just saying that Google's
And
using your personal data to offer new related searches below.
100% is in the session data. Google has to know where you've gone to and where you've come from. It mightn't be recording that against you, but it actually does have to know for its own self.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. It would have to be in the session data.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't have her history turned off always. So, and Google has the new ad status. We don't do a lot with ads because Jim and I don't do ads. So things, you know, we don't want to misrepresent anything. But this is what I thought was interesting. There's a new status where they have it listed in the ad manager that you have improvements, need improvements, has improvements. Sorry, has improvements. And what you do is when you click on that, it shows you improvements you can make to the ad to make it do better. Whether that's going to be good information or not is debatable. I've really
So
experienced
Google will
sad
tell
people.
you. Google will be Google will look over your shoulder and say, "Hey, you know, you could do this better, right?"
Yeah, pretty much. But I know really experienced ad people don't tend to like the advice Google gives about ads. So we'll see if it's good advice or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Google Discover is testing a read later the carousel.
Yeah. So when you save your, this is actually a good function. Hey, they did UI right. When you save an article for reading later, it'll show it in the bottom of the screen in a carousel so that you have easy access to read it later.
Okay.
Google Shopping ads are going to be showing with AI generated descriptions. So it's just making the ads bigger and bigger, of course, taking up more of the page. But it's just going to give an AI description of the what's there.
This one, I you can see why it
Our
happens.
closing story.
At the same time, it's probably going to weird you out, but you can understand why it happens. So this guy took a message of his friend, a message, a photo of his friend's dog. His friend's dog was rolling around on his back, exposing its tummy, and well, I guess the iPhone scanned a and flagged a video of this guy's friend's dog as nudity, and it blurred out the imagery. Dog nipples.
Yeah, it was the dog nipples. This is from 404 Media. So I mean, obviously they do this scanning to look for people that are doing things that are illegal, like CSAM imagery. But it's just kind of funny that the
But
dog, because the dog's like a hairy little dog. If this is the right picture of the dog, I mean, it's, I can't even see it in the image. So.
well, it's because they blur it out, or they put a little black line across whatever it might
Oh, that's
be.
right. That's a black line. I thought that was the dog collar.
No, that's a sensor. That's a sensor's mark.
Yeah.
So your iPhone, thinking it might be detecting kiddie porn. Are we allowed to say kiddie porn, or do we have to like use some acronym that people don't know exactly?
No, yeah. I mean, I say CSAM because we use that frequently. But yeah, you're right. You can say kiddie porn. That's
Child
what it
sexual
is.
material,
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
kiddie porn. So it thinks it's child porn, which is obviously really, 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 really beyond so horribly illegal and immoral and exploitative and all of that. But it's a picture of a dog, and moreover,
The weird thing
iPhone is
isn't,
watching your pictures.
yeah, but that happens like on all platforms. I mean, it does.
Yeah.
But I am kind of concerned that the AI could pick up, or whatever they're using, could pick up the dog's nipples, but not that it's a dog.
Well, true. You know what
And
else really bothers me?
that
If
there are
it
six of
does
them.
pick up a picture of the dog's nipples and decides that this might be child pornography, is it notifying the police? Because don't you think it
No,
should?
no. No, generally speaking, it goes to a human moderator. I don't know
Okay, so the
specific
human
about
moderator
that.
looks at it and goes, "Wow, that's a hairy child."
Yeah, there is somebody, there are people, we did an article years ago. I don't know if we did it, but I mean, I think we did it on the show when I was filling in, about a Facebook people, the moderators who do this work. Like, it's horrific work, like, to look through this stuff. But it does get flagged and go to a human review, and a human, because they need the human to be involved anyways, because they need to get data from the phone if that's what's going on. They need to know information about the account to send the police. So they do scan it for that. They're not scanning every photo though for like anything else, but I do think it's weird that it didn't know it's a dog. Like, yeah,
Well,
so
it could be one ugly child. That's
very
one ugly
hairy,
person.
very hairy child. Also,
Hey.
children who walk, boy children who walk around with shirts off. So, I mean, I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, yeah,
So.
for the record, unless you're their parent, if you are taking pictures of
Well,
boy
that's true. Yes.
children with their, you, that's creepy.
Well,
Not
it
you,
is creepy, of
Christine. Not you,
course.
creepy. I'm
No,
not saying that you're creepy, but
I just,
just
anyway.
for the listeners out there who might be wondering. If you do it, you're creepy. So don't do it.
Right. Sorry.
Okay.
Two
Recommended
quick.
reading.
Yeah. This is a new thing we added about a month ago. And there is, and you're going to say the name because I'm afraid, because I only see his name. I never hear it said. I'm in a group with him.
Shugthin Mohana Addison. Mohan Addison. Yeah.
Yes.
Shugthin Mohan Addison.
So he's been doing a lot of deep dives into the large language models and what they're looking at. He's looking at APIs to see what they're pulling. So he has an article, How Perplexity Actually Picks Sources. I read the stream, not the answers. I read Perplexity's raw answer stream to see how it picks sources, which domains get cited by intent, and how it's going to show up and get cited by Perplexity. He also talks about ChatGPT and other large language models. I think it's definitely worth the read. It's a nice in-depth piece, and you should follow him. He talks about this stuff all the time on social media.
Okay, another recommended read. This one comes from Kevin Indig and Greg Jarboe. 89% of search demand has no clear owner. What that means is 11% of search can fall into a discernible category of sorts. 1,094 discernible categories, in fact, but 89% of AI search doesn't fall into any of those categories. No, no,
Yeah.
no brand or company owns these spaces.
Exactly. And they're saying that this is an opportunity for people while this remains open in this way. So it's on which Search Engine Journal
Yeah,
by
they're
Greg
both from Journal.
Jarboe.
They're both from Search and Journal this week.
And also on Kevin Indig's Growth Memo Substack from July 29th. So
Think
definitely worth
about
it to
this
check it
one.
out.
Think about this one closely. Every once in a while, the internet gives us real estate booms. This could be the equivalent thereof, a concept boom. But, in an information economy, concept is real estate.
Yes, and Kevin does usually a really good analysis of things. I didn't have enough time to get fully in depth on this one, but it looked like a very good
Oh,
article.
Kevin's good. You see
Yeah,
his
he's
name,
very good.
and you're like, that's probably well thought through.
Exactly. Yeah, he does a good job. So, yep. So that's it.
That's it. We've
Yay.
gone full circle. This was a shorter one. This was a lot of fun. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Friends, you have been listening to Webcology, recorded live to podcast on a Thursday, the 30th of July, 2026. For those of us living in northern climes, go outside and enjoy yourself because you really don't have a lot of time of a lot of this left.
And for those
Summer
living
is
in the
so almost over.
Southwest, where it's 100 and supposed to be 110, it's only gonna be 104 and 5 this week.
Well,
We're entering our winter for a few weeks, and then we'll be back out to our summer until October. Schools don't even close here
again,
until October
if you don't
31st.
have it, it's hard to if you don't have year-round summer, it's hard to express how much we appreciate the very short
Oh,
one
yes.
that we do have. So go out and enjoy it while you can. On behalf of Christine Schackinger, this is Jim Hedger. Be good, be kind, be well, rank well, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.